Welcome to another episode of Tales from the DC Multiverse. I'm your host, Adam, and with me is my co-host, Travis. Travis, how's it going?
Pretty good, Adam. What about yourself?
Not too bad. Just trying to deal with the cold weather in our country.
Yeah, that's a staple for Canada and Canadians, that's for sure.
Yep. So all you listeners, if there are any in Florida or California or anywhere where it's warm, enjoy it and think of us freezing while you're enjoying it. It's almost like we've been attacked by Mr. Freeze.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of shoveling. I think Mr. Freeze should know that.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. I agree with you. It's been a busy week, but we're back for another round of Gotham talk this week. Before we get to that, let's do our usual routine. Travis, was there anything that you read this week that you want to highlight?
Yes, I read a book that I haven't came across before, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. Batman Huntress, Cry for Blood.
Ooh.
I didn't exactly know about this book, and I found it at a local comic shop, and it was in a discount bin, so I decided to give it a shot, and I kind of got to say, Adam, I really enjoyed this book.
And it was a graphic novel, or was it single issue?
It was a graphic novel, 136 pages, I think it was. I'm trying to remember now. Greg Rakuta, Rick Burchett, and Terry Bitty. Bietti.
Yeah, okay.
And the question is in it. Helena Bertinelli's in it. Batman's in it. It's a great read. I recommend it for anybody. And it's a good little hidden gem out there.
So it is the Helena Bertinelli character. So
yes.
As we get excited for Birds of Prey, maybe that's a read that they should, that our listeners should take you up on a recommendation. And
yeah, if you do read it, drop me a line on Twitter. I'd love to discuss it with you guys anytime. I don't want to spoil it, but it's a lot of fun.
Awesome. And you know what? I'll keep it in the same vein. Well, sort of one of the characters. Nah, screw it. I'll go full blown. I'll say, if you haven't read the Birds of Prey run by Gail Simone, I would highly recommend reading it. It's fantastic. The art's fantastic. And it'll really get you sort of familiar with the Huntress and Black Canary. So I would definitely highly recommend that. And that was really... Gail Simone's work in that title really defined the character of Oracle. So it's definitely worth a read. I think anybody who reads it will have an appreciation for these characters going into, ahead of the movie, which is still a year away, but it is filming, and given that it started filming last week, I thought it'd be a good recommendation to make. From myself, I read it back in the days of when the Birds of Prey TV show was on the air, before that came on the air. And so that's when I first read it, and I remember thoroughly enjoying it. So that's my recommendation as well. All right, so let's get to some news, shall we?
Yes, let's chat. Let's do that.
All right, so I thought it'd be a good time to check in on Aquaman's box office. And it's all good news. Domestically, Aquaman has climbed to $306.5 million, which essentially puts it past now Man of Steel, on the DC chart. And then I know, because a lot of DC fans will get upset if we don't mention that it's passed a bunch of Marvel movies. Well, it's passed a bunch of Marvel movies. It's basically where it falls right now is it's about 6 million, slightly 6 million behind Iron Man 2. So before the end of its run, I could see Aquaman passing both Iron Man movies, Thor Ragnarok, probably Deadpool 2. And I'm going to say that because it's gotten ahead of Suicide Squad. So I could see it passing Suicide Squad. And it's got an outside shot of passing Batman vs. Superman. So it'll be on the lookout to pass those, to see if it can pass those on the domestic front over the next few weeks as it sort of winds down its run. So domestically, it's now in the upper echelon, having, gone by the 300 million mark. And then, let's see here. The foreign number is now 759.1 million for a worldwide total of $1.065 billion.
Staggering, Adam, staggering. And it's at 294 million in China, making it the 13th highest grossing film of all time in China, which is pretty impressive.
That's insane. It's truly insanity. And it's worth noting that all time, it is the second highest grossing DC movie period. Never mind DCEU, DC movie period. It passed The Dark Knight worldwide, and it will surpass before the end of its run The Dark Knight Rises. So, in effect, Aquaman will be the highest grossing DC film of all time by the end of this run.
Yes, and that's what we got to hope for as DC fans, that each movie outperforms the one before it.
Yeah, and I mean, even if it does, relative to the budget, whatever the budget is for each one.
Yeah, like, now I'm not expecting Shazam to cross a billion, but Shazam also didn't have the VFX and CGI cast that Aquaman has.
We'll talk about Shazam in a minute for sure.
Yeah.
Because, actually, it's a good segue.
Yeah.
They released a, I guess they're calling it a TV spot for Shazam with the playoff football games this past weekend. I mean, I think the TV spot is, well, the whole thing is a minute, but the first 20 seconds is like an introduction from Zachary Levi. So it's really like 40-some-odd seconds. It shows a shot of essentially, him going into the Rock of Eternity, which we've kind of seen in the trailers. But then it shows, to me, which is one of the best shots of the TV spot, Billy is on a roof and he's running across the rooftop. And as he leaps off, he yells Shazam. And this, by the way, is my favorite shot of the trailer, or the TV spot. As he yells Shazam, a lightning bolt hits him, and as he starts falling, he transforms into Shazam and takes off flying away. That was a great shot. The other shot that really stands out to me is his fight in midair with Dr. Savannah. Because, at least to me, it echoes a lot of the fight between Zod and Superman in Man of Steel. What do you think, Travis?
I agree with you on both of what you said there. That was my favorite shot as well. A little special note, I really loved the air dispersing around when he took a shot off. You could see the air like dispersing around him. I thought that was a nice little touch. Bravo, David Sandberg. And I agree with you as well. about the other shot. I think that this looked great. I assume that this is just part of the trailer.
Sure.
In general, that we're going to get on Tuesday the 22nd. Also, one that I really loved and I was laughing relentlessly at was when they're trying to get a headquarters lair.
Yeah.
I thought that was hilarious. Bravo. This movie, I'm all in for this movie. I can't wait.
Yeah, and even the part where he goes to buy the beer, as Shazam, and he's like, I'll take your finest beer, man. And the cashier, whatever she is, looks at him like, what the hell's wrong with you? And just points him in the direction of where the beer is. And they're really playing up the what would it be like if a child was inside the body of a superhero?
It basically plays on all our imaginations when we were that age that we wanted to be superheroes. And I think that's fantastic. And I also agree with the Man of Steel nods there when they're fighting in midair. I think that's a big nod to Man of Steel.
Yeah.
And say what you want about the way he structured stories. I think Zack Snyder changed the game when it comes to superhero battles and fights.
Yes, I agree.
Like visually and stylistically, with the way they use their powers and that. This is great. I can't wait for Tuesday to see the full trailer.
The only thing that I hope, and I have a feeling it'll be different, because you know that I love Man of Steel.
Yeah.
My one complaint with Man of Steel was that I think the third act lasted too long.
Yeah.
Dragged down a little too long. And I think they went a little bit overboard in that third act with the quote-unquote destruction porn. Like, I get it, but I think you could have lessened that a little bit and it would have still had the same impact. And so, but I don't think Shazam will run into that problem. And so I don't think it'll be an issue. But,
no, I got to agree with you there, too, about the I don't think Shazam will run into that problem. I got a feeling it's going to be addressed. I got a feeling Billy's friend is going to mention how Superman dealt with a lot of backlash from what happened.
Oh, that would be interesting. Yes.
I think that that's what's going to happen. But I'm on the other side of the fence with that. I'm totally okay with it because it's superpower beings and Zod is a special kind of crazy. So I could understand. But I do see your point. They could have dialed it back a bit to tend to like other people's needs. They didn't have to go at full bore with it as they did. Even though I enjoyed it, I can see where other people didn't.
Don't get me wrong. I enjoyed all the battles. I'm just saying
that. Yeah. Oh, I know what you're saying. You're saying that like they could have scaled up. Like, you didn't have to destroy all kinds of skyscrapers. You only need to destroy one or two to
meaning. Once you see the second building go down, we're like, okay, we get it. Like,
yeah.
We understand but what
also,
you're
it's really good. This is a complete segue, but it is really good for the lead into BVS is that problem that people are like, Superman is like, we got to figure out something to deal with that dude. So there's good and bad to everything, but yeah. I got to agree with you. I don't think Shazam's going to fall into any of the controversial points of Man of Steel. I just got to think it's going to touch on all the good stuff with the flight and that.
And you know what I thought was really, after watching that TV spot, because there's information that recently came out that the production budget for Shazam is between $80 to $90 million. And just judging from the visuals in that 40 seconds we saw, that's incredible. That is.
Oh, agreed. And it also helps with the children being cast in the cast. They're not going to cost you as much as a supporting actor like Lawrence Fishburne or a supporting actor like Kevin Costner or a supporting actor like Russell Crowe. Those guys run you in the major cast. Like, they're $5-10 million people for a movie. So you get them, they drive your budget up too. It all adds up. So having those little kids that are just going to grow into the role, like they're not going to command 1/120th of the salary. I don't think that those other actors do in most of the other movies.
Yeah, good point. But just in terms of what they're able to pull off, it looks astonishing, and which means that with that kind of a budget, you know, Shazam doesn't have to go bonkers in terms of box office amount to be profitable. So that's a good thing. So yeah, but I love the TV spot. I can't wait for the trailer, which by the time you're reading this will have come out, but we will discuss it next episode.
Just gives us something to discuss next week. That's
right. I think that's you. Oh, yeah, by the way, before we move on, there is a little bit of news that we want to tell you about. The DCCW shows are in effect back. So far, we've had an episode of Flash and an episode of Supergirl. And now, as of this recording, this week will bring us the return of Arrow and Black Lightning.
At a new time for Black Lightning as well.
Oh, okay. What's the time for?
Arrow's after it. I thought.
No, I think it's after Arrow, isn't it?
Maybe it is. I'm not sure, but they're both together now on Monday
night. Yeah, they're on Monday nights. Yeah, that's right.
Which I always thought that was probably the better. I know why they jumped with the Flash at start, because it's your most popular show. Right. So you lead Black Lightning into that to get more viewers. But I always thought that Black Lightning was as close to Arrow in terms of trying to be grounded and just the darkness of it all. Yeah, so I think that it's a great night to have them both together.
Yeah, good point. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think as much as I don't like the show, I think Legends should be paired with Flash.
Agreed 100%.
Doesn't mean I'm going to watch it, but
it was in the top 10 pirated shows. Exactly. The DCCW had three.
Nobody actually wants to watch it live, so they pirated it.
Well, they had three of the top 10 shows. The Flash was at two, Arrow was at six, and Legends was at 10.
That's crazy.
Well, it's good for the. I just don't know how the networks take this into account, the pirate stuff, but it is good for popularity wise.
Well, it means they're popular, so I think yeah. at the end of the day, it gets to CW. Maybe if they were going to cancel a show, maybe they'll think twice and say, okay, there is value here. It's just how do we get those people watching live or on TV instead of
pirating. Yeah,
exactly. That's the question. But yeah, that's a good point. But you have some Arrow information, don't you?
Yeah, I have. There's a little article dropped today by Matt Webb that from TV Line, and it's pretty good. It goes in depth with Beth Schwartz, the showrunner on Arrow now, and talked about what they have, some of the stuff they have planned for the back half of the season. I won't spill the whole article, but let's say not everyone's going to love that Oliver's working with the police. We'll get to see a Birds of Prey episode revolving Black Siren, revolving around Black Siren. We'll get to see a full episode of The Future in episode 16. And we may even get a little appearance by Robert Queen, the actual actor that played him, that we've always seen as him. Maybe even tonight. So I can't wait for it to start off tonight. As you know, Adam, we've discussed off-air. Arrow has been my favorite of the DCCW so far in the first half of this year.
Yeah, I don't even think
there's debate. Maybe people can probably bring me everyone have their own favorite shows, but I think if you ask critics critically, I don't think that anyone would argue that Arrow's been the best first half of this year.
I would agree with that. I mean, the Flash improved from last year, which I thought was abysmal, and it's been better this year.
Agreed.
But still, Arrow's top notch, and you know my stance on Legends has fallen off the map. I mean, I'm doing reviews for everything except Legends.
Yeah.
on the CW on Revenge of the Fans. And Black Lightning to me this year has been, I mean, we're going to do full reviews of those seasons
when they cap, yeah.
They're finished, but just to you know, my top one has been Arrow, the second one has been Flash. Black Lightning's been good, but it's had its moments where it's been up and down. And I don't think it's been as strong as it was in season one. I mean, it's nowhere near as bad to the point where I'm going to drop it, but I'm just saying it's not living up to the quality of season one. The Supergirl's been good for the most part, I love the fact that they are dealing with the real world, you know, real world politics. I just find that sometimes they lean too heavily into the anti-Trump angle. And I think sometimes it takes over the show in certain moments. Don't get me wrong. I think Trump's a jerk. And I think a lot of people do. But we understand that the guy's a fool. We don't need to be, you know, beaten over the head with it. So, and just an example, last night's episode, I don't know if you watched.
I haven't watched. Don't spoil. I was planning on watching tonight.
No spoilers. But
okay. You can give the scenario if this is another thing. Because I'm in full agreement with you. It's cool that they tackle social issues, but sometimes they beat a dead horse with it. Let's get back to more of the magical and mystical elements of Supergirl. We all know Trump is a terrible, despicable human being. I don't need to be, like you said, I don't need to be told every week that he is.
The good thing about this episode was that there wasn't a mention of that.
Oh, nice.
And I think it was probably the best episode of the season.
I'll have to give you my thoughts off air tonight about that.
I
had one other thing about that news article that I forgot to mention. There will be an episode that David Ramsey has directed that encompasses basically Suicide Squad, but without the name. They're going by Ghost Initiative, I think. Ghost Initiative is what their group is going to be called. So it's going to be just like the Suicide Squad, and apparently Ricardo Diaz is going to be leading that group. So it's going to be great to see how he gets from being captured to coerced into leading that group. My money is on explosion planted in his brain, but we'll have to see. That group includes Cupid, China White, which we haven't seen in a very long time, and Slade's son. So this is going to be pretty fun.
That Deathstroke. That's who we're
getting. Yeah, Kane Wolfman. I thought that. Well, he wore the
Deathstroke. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's going to be fun. I think that, and apparently, what Diggle and Lila are investigating is going to tie into the big picture for the end of the season. So look at that, those scenes with particularly curious eyes.
So to me, the ones that I'm most excited for. That you mentioned are the one that's set full in the future.
Yeah.
And the one, the Birds of Prey one.
I agreed. Those two, I'm also excited for the Suicide Squad one. And one other thing, the Flash's showrunner was asked the same thing, and they kind of said similar things. He was asked, Arrow's showrunner was asked, if anything will happen in the last 10 episodes or the last half of the season that'll affect Crisis on Infinite Earths. And all she said was, it's possible, it's possible. So who knows? We might even get some things that come into play for the crossover next year.
Cool. I'm excited. And it seems like a lot of cool things are coming our way through Arrow.
Oh, agreed.
So yeah, all right. Well, that brings the news to a close. So why don't we discuss the next couple of episodes of Gotham, which are episodes 2 and 3. So let's get right to it. So in episode 2, Gordon and Bullock were investigating a location where kids were being kidnapped, and then. The interesting thing is Barbara ends up to be an unlikely ally to Jim Gordon. Meanwhile, we have Bruce looking into the quote-unquote witch with healing powers to help Miss Venus. So that's the gist, the general idea of what episode 2 was. What do you think of episode 2?
I thought it was a little slower than the first episode, but that's to be expected. But we had two solid storylines. Gordon going to try and save the kids from Sykes, and had a really great showdown there. I thought that was fantastic. Gordon's really shining this season so far. And the other one was Bruce trying to help Selena and going up against Ivy, which I thought showed a lot of the cunning that the Dark Knight is going to be using going forward. He used his wits instead of his fists for the most part to get out of that jam. And I just like that. And the other thing that I thoroughly enjoyed now is knowing that the Riddler is trying to start a war with all the other tribes, gangs, whatever we want to call them, by especially spray painting Penguin was here on the scene. Who would believe that Penguin would kill everybody and then leave and say Penguin was here? I thought that was great. So I enjoyed this episode, but I thought it was a little slow, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it was a little slower, but I did like the first of all, I don't like to do this too often, but I was right. The witch in question is indeed Poison Ivy, and through the plants that she uses, she gives Bruce a root that will cure Selena. And I really like Peyton List's version of Poison Ivy, because she is very seductive and she is very she embodies the core essential elements of Poison Ivy's character quite well. So I like that. And I like that effect. So when he gives her that plant or whatever it is to chew on, it heals Selena completely to the point where she can walk and everything. But as they're celebrating her being healed and Bruce is hugging her, we see a shot of Selena, and her eyes are like, have almost become, like the pupils in her eyes almost become feline and they turn green. So this is Gotham's way of making Selena close to the Batman Returns version of Catwoman, with enhanced abilities. But the way they're going about it is, instead of mystical cats, bringing her back to life, it was Poison Ivy that had a hand in it. And I like that. I mean, it's a cool change, and it makes sense for the context of the show. In terms of Gordon saving the kidnapped kids, that aspect of the show felt very much like a horror episode movie, because they had to go up against what's the girl's name? Mother. They call her Mother, and just the fact that we see Boa go into a room that is filled with dismembered body parts, like fingers and stuff like that, and just like the atmosphere, like the music and the way it was darkly shot, and the jump scares with the kids being around the corners and stuff. It just really felt like a horror movie, something in a horror movie. And Gotham's been really cool about, throughout the course of its run, being able to throw different genres into certain episodes. And I like that they've been able to do that. Barbara, given how unhinged she is, it's cool to see her kind of help Gordon. But I have a feeling that she and Gordon are going to get together briefly, and they're going to have a thing, and she's going to get pregnant, and this is where Batgirl. This is the whole Batgirl, like Barbara Gordon, his child, will come to play. So I think in the flash forward, so what I think is we'll see maybe in Unitarian them get together, and the flash forward we'll get a mention of some sort of a young child named Barbara Gordon.
Barbara the blonde and...
Yeah, I think Barbara...
Okay. I thought you were saying Ivy first. I was like, what? Ivy and Jim?
I know. I mean, Gotham has done some weird stuff. So, you never know. But no. What I mean is Barbara Keane and Jim are going to have a get-together and basically have a sexual interaction.
I think that you might be right there.
This season. And then that's going to basically lay the groundwork. So, in the flash forward, we're going to have Gordon mentioning his daughter, Barbara Gordon.
So that could be it. Or she could die and he could meet a new Barbara in the end of the episode, end of the season.
Yeah, I mean, that could be an option.
Because she's going off the rails, Adam, a lot. I don't know how you can be in her mindset and survive to the end of the season. Maybe she will, but she just don't give a frick anymore. She just wants to kill Penguin.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out for sure. But yeah, I thought it was good. Even though it was a little slower, I thought it was a solid episode.
Well, that segue you just did with Barbara leads us into the third episode, because this has a lot to do with Penguin.
Yeah, but okay, just before we get to that, though, if you had to rate
episode two,
what would you rate it?
Well, I guess we're going out of 10. I'll go out of 10, seeing how that's what you did last time, and I'll give it a 7.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and give it a solid 7.5.
Nice.
So, yeah, I enjoyed it. So in episode 3, let me pull up the description here in a second. All right, so for episode 3, here's the description. With the creation of Haven as a safe place for refugees, Gordon hopes to stop the gang fighting in Gotham. Meanwhile, Selina is determined to find Jeremiah, and she convinces Bruce to help her. Then Penguin goes to Haven to reclaim his staff. So you're right. This episode had a lot more Penguin involvement, or was more Penguin-centric. And it's funny how, like, he's gotten his corner of Gotham, like his grouping, to like really worship the ground he walks on. I mean, they're singing songs about him. It's insane how much they adore Penguin and think he's the supreme, you know, being of sorts. And but there's moments where he loses a lot of his people. And he freaks out, like he snaps. And I always get a kick out of watching Robin Lord Taylor play Penguin going nuts. I think he's at his best, the crazier Penguin gets. So I thought that was a lot of fun. To me, the best part of the episode was the... Selina and Bruce working together to track down Jeremiah. What's interesting is that whatever abilities that plant that Bruce used to heal had, it's me or gave Selena, it's made her more violent, if you will. And so she's very violent now. And you know how you said earlier that Barbara's gone nuts and the only thing she wants is to kill Penguin?
Yeah.
You can say the same thing with Selena.
Oh, agreed. 100% agreed.
But with Jeremiah.
I have a question for you. It does have to do with this, but did you get vibes of Thea when she was brought back from with the Lazarus Pit having to kill whoever killed her? Or Sarah, sorry, was brought back with the Lazarus Pit and had to kill Thea? Like, that was all she thought about was the person that killed her. She wouldn't stop thinking about it until she killed that person. She had that lust. That's a feeling I got here in Spades.
Yeah, definitely, for sure.
Yes, like, I couldn't help but think that, because we seen the same thing. She's seen flashbacks of Thea, like, she was going after people that looked like Thea at first. But now, like, Selena has more control, but you can see that this is all she thinks about. She was dreaming about it, and she even sees it when she's walking around as well, the thoughts of Jeremiah killing her. So I thought that, like, I'll agree with you on this. This was the height and highlight of the episode.
Now, did you notice that when Bruce and Selena were searching for Jeremiah and they were working together, and they come across a gang, and how it's very reminiscent of the mutant gang?
I thought that's exactly what it was.
Yeah. I mean, the leader of that gang looked exactly like the mutant leader from Dark Knight Returns.
The way the mutants talk, he said that during the Dice and Slice. He said that.
Yes,
He said told Selena he was going to slice and dice her. So yeah. I don't mind. I can see, I already see people being mad that Catwoman Selena beat up the mutant leader. But this is very early on. The mutant leader we see in the Dark Knight comic has been around for a while and has quite the following. This looks like a second day on the job mutant leader.
Oh, yeah, I have no issue with that.
Yeah. Well, you know there's always people that have issues with everything, so.
Yeah, but what are you going to do? No, but I actually thought it was, because you're right. When he said, I'm going to slice and dice you. But then that's kind of what she did when she was scratching his face. It reminded me of Catwoman's first appearance in Batman Returns when she was scratching. Remember when she saved the girl from being assaulted?
Yeah.
Scratched his face. It reminded me of that.
Same. I got those vibes as well.
And then the I liked, so when they get to this, they come upon a church that is devoted to Jeremiah, and inside you have, I guess the character's name on Gotham is Echo, who's basically the Harley Quinn of the show. She's sort of recruiting followers, and she has each person in the church sort of grab, she gives them a gun and says, okay, if you want to be part of this church, and see if you have the guts to pull the trigger, right? So she basically forces them to shoot the other one in the head. And that reminded me of, remember in The Dark Knight when Joker breaks the pool cube in half and gives it to two of those two bodyguards of Gamble, and says, if you guys want to join my you want to enjoy my organization, there's only room for one of you. So the one that kind of reminded me of that.
Same, Adam, same. I think that these were specifically put in here as references and nods to Batman's past. And I couldn't agree more with that. That was a really freaky scene, to be honest with you, because all those people just didn't care. Selina grabbed the gun. She prevented it from firing with her claws, but still, that was a pretty freaky scene. And I'm going to call her Harley Quinn because she did say pudding.
Yeah, no. She, and that's what was my next point. Look, to me, nobody's going to be better than my multiverse Earth 2 wife, Margot Robbie. However, this actress, let me find her name so I can give her proper credit. Where is it? I had it up here. Damn it. Okay, give me a second while I look it up. But this actress, when I'm looking it up, I'll still talk. She did a phenomenal job. In her own right, of doing Harley Quinn, because you're right, she had the craziness down pat.
100%.
And look wise, they made her, you know, her outfit was red and black. You know, kind of like Harley's traditional outfit is. And you're right, she does say pudding, so...
She's called Echo here, I think this is the person.
Yeah, she's called Echo, but...
Francisca Brute Dodson is her name.
Yeah. She did a phenomenal job, so I gotta give her credit. For the performance she gave. She was insane.
She blind in a horror movie, Adam.
Yeah.
That's what the feeling was like. And I'll echo your sentiments. I think this episode was far greater than the one before it. And Penguin, I really loved how Penguin wanted was the adoration that Jim Gordon had. And all Jim Gordon did was just be a nice guy and look out for his people and give them food and that. And we seen in the first episode that Penguin wasn't giving very much food to anybody, more than his dog. He was starving him, so we could see why they left and why they were passing out and why they just bailed. They didn't want to have anything to do with him because he didn't care. I think he learned that at the end, that he had to look after his people a little bit. And he, at the end of it, he did get the adoration that he desperately needed. You could see his smile on his face from ear to ear when people were chanting his name. And that was pretty funny to see, even in the world, even with Gotham as chaotic as it is, all Penguin wants is to be loved. And that's pretty funny.
And you know what's funny, too? Even though they're always at odds with each other, once again, we have Penguin and Jim Gordon making a deal to work together for the good of Gotham.
He's like your buddy that you don't really like, but you have to. He's always just ends up being your buddy.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because in his own weird way, I do think Oswald loves the city of Gotham.
That's true. He in his own twist, sick way. And was there any more famous last words than "everyone hated you"? And just I thought that was so funny. I laughed. I actually laughed when that happened.
Yeah. And I still got a kick out of the dog being named Edward. So that's pretty funny. But
note on this episode, Adam, I thought it was a really nice, touching scene when Jim made a little kid a deputy.
Yes.
And like he was like, I'm allergic to pineapple, which I thought was pretty funny. Like he don't want to hand. It seemed like to me that was like he don't want a handout. He wants to help. He don't want to be taken care of.
Yeah.
And I thought that was great. That tugged at the heartstrings right after being terrified. So. With that Harley Quinn, Catwoman, Children of the Corn, weird type thing that was going on. To go from that to this just shows the levels that Gotham can go on. Like you spoke to in the previous, when we were talking about the previous episode, it can go to a horror mode like that, but also switch to gangster, also switch to like feels. Like it's this season's been on point so far.
Now, here's my question now. Actually, when he does meet that boy, a deputy, I mean, it's a different kind of scene, but don't you think, again, it's reminiscent of Batman Begins, where, you know, Gordon puts the coat on young Bruce when he's talking to him about, you know, when they caught Joe Chill.
Yeah, I got the same feeling there, and like I said, I don't think it's coincidence that we're getting all these feelings from old past Batman movies and shows from this final season, because I think that's the plan all along.
Now, here's another question I have for you. Who do you think set off the bomb in Haven at the end of the episode?
Gotta go with Jeremiah as my guess. We haven't seen him yet, and I'm already ready to see him. So I think that he's probably the one that did it. But who knows? We haven't seen a lot of the gangs yet, so it could have been any of these. But my money, it could be Bane as well. That would be my second guess, because we haven't seen him yet, and we're told that we're going to see him. So that would be my second guess, but my money's on Jeremiah.
Yeah, that's the only other... I'm going to say 97% that I think it's going to be Jeremiah. But
yeah.
I think that's a 3% chance that it's actually Bane. But those are the only two options that...
I hope that kid is all right, because that would be an extra crushing blow to Jim Gordon and the rest of them, especially after he just said, as long as this place is standing, we have Gotham has hope. And then that happens. So I hope that that kid is okay.
And I also hope that we... I know they got a lot of things to do before the end of the season, but I hope that we do get to see Scarecrow again before it's all said and done.
I think we will. He was such a hit in the first episode. They gotta involve him some more.
Yeah. So, all right. So this seems like a winning episode from both of us. So, what would you rate this episode out of 10 of yet?
I'm gonna give this a 9 out of 10.
You know what? I'll go one small bit higher. I'll give it a 9.5.
Ooh.
Out of 10, because the actress that played Harley Quinn did such a good did such a good job, and really won me over and impressed me. Like, at the end of the day, I'm biased to Margot Robbie, and I did the typical fanboy thing where I'm like, I don't want to like you, I'm not going to, but she won me over. So
fanboys, take notice of this. Adam had a preconceived notion about a character, but went in with an open mind, albeit skeptical. The actress and writing changed his mind. He was okay with it, and now he has a different opinion. Oh my God, like it's like that stuff can never happen.
I know. It's shocking. Bravo, man. But yeah, so 9.5 out of 10 for me for this episode 3.
Argument there. I think she was the shining, supporting member of this episode to me too.
Yes. All right then. That's it for in terms of content we have. So before we get out of here, I just want to remind our audience that the plan. Okay, so let's give them just a quick rundown of what's going to be happening in the next couple of weeks. So our next episode is going to be our review of Reign of the Superman, the second part of the Death and Return of Superman, two-part DC animated film series. And we're going to have our international correspondent, Stephen Marshall, join us for that.
Part of the MVP!
Yes. And then what we're going to do after that is we are going to start a long-promised segment on the show, and we're going to do a graphic novel review, and a more in-depth graphic novel review.
Awesome.
And it's going to be Man of Steel, the six, or the, I think it was, the miniseries that basically was the starting point of Brian Michael Bendis's current run on both Superman titles. So we're going to be covering that. And joining us for that is my co-host on my other podcast, which launched by the time you listen to this podcast, Superheroes and Sci-Fi, Musings with Ryan and Adam, or Adam and Ryan, whatever, whichever way you want to phrase it. But Ryan Hulsman will be coming on, and he'll be doing that comic review with us. And just a heads up, if you want to, that podcast will not detract from anything that Travis and I are doing here. What that podcast will deal with is any superhero franchise that is not DC, we will cover. So that includes Marvel, IDW, Image, Dynamite, whatever superhero franchises exist outside of DC, we'll cover there. And we'll also cover sci-fi properties like Star Trek, Star Wars, Battlestar Galactica, RoboCop, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Transformers, etc., etc. And so, in our first episode, we did a whole bunch of news, and we covered the first episodes of both the History Channel's Project Blue Book and the CW's Roswell. So, if you want to hear some sci-fi goodness, head over to the podcast page, the same podcast page you find this podcast, and you'll find the first episode of that podcast there, so you can listen to that. But Ryan will be here in a couple of episodes' time to review Man of Steel with us. And then the following episode, we will do our review of the first 12 episodes of Young Justice Season 3.
Exciting times, Adam. Exciting times. So I'm really excited for the Reign of Superman review.
Yeah. It's going to be some fun stuff. Looking forward to all three of those. And but in the meantime, Travis, if people want to get in touch with you via social media, where can they do that?
They can find me on Twitter at Travis_156. Just drop me a line. We can chat DC anytime. And I have a little podcast from Anchor called Superhero Discussions, where I talk about stuff that mostly myself and Adam don't cover. This week, I already did the Spider-Man Homecoming trailer, the Young Justice episodes 7-9, just some quick thoughts on that. So you can find that there. And also, if you're looking for a primer before our Reign of Superman review, I was on the DC Drop and reviewed that movie last week with Tom and Zach, and we did The Death of Superman. I think it was their fourth episode. So those are two that you can look to to further your knowledge, plus this one coming up. And my advice to everyone is to watch Death of Superman and Reign of Superman back-to-back if you could, because that's what I did, and it was fantastic. So, yeah, that's where you can find me, and drop me a line anytime to chat anything superhero-wise.
And if you want to find me, you can do so at Superhero Sci-Fi on Twitter. You can join the Tales from the DC Multiverse podcast Facebook group. And either Travis or I will add you to the group. You can read my Tales from the DC Multiverse column for the shows that Travis and I did not cover so far, where I have a weekly column where I review.
It's a must-read, people. It's a must-read.
Thank you. Where I look at the DC CW universe in-depth each week. And then, so you can find me in those avenues. And I just want to give a shout-out. We are part of the Revenge of the Fans podcast network, and there's and plenty of other fantastic podcasts that you should be listening to. Mario Francisco Robles, the editor-in-chief of Ruin the Fans, has his own personal podcast called The Fanboy. He also has a podcast called The Revengers, where he's joined by Brett Thomas Miro and Vanessa Bontea. So they have a sort of like a trinity of podcasters on that one. There's also the Play It Loud podcast, which is more of a video game centric podcast. There's the Fanboy Garage, which features Aaron Varola and Chris Lasanti. So all those podcasts are worthy of your time. So give them a listen. And also, we are also part of the we are also featured on the Batman Podcast Network, which has a lot of Batman related content in terms of podcast form. So if you want more straight up Bat Talk, go there and you can find a podcast that is for you.
But those are some must listens, Adam. And I just want to say congratulations to Prevent the Fans and Mario, the rest of the people there, on 1 year. Yes. They're one of my go-to sites for information. They don't run clickbait articles. They warn you for spoilers. And Mario, I find, doesn't put something out unless he's 100% positive on his sources. He's willing to give up scoops to make sure that he's 100% positive on his information. And that's the kind of reporter and reporting I enjoy. So, yeah. Big congratulations to them.
Yeah, no. The reason why I enjoy being a part of that crew is because Mario runs the ship with a lot of class and integrity, and that's a rarity in the internet. So, definitely. It's been a good year, and I think the year two is going to be even better. Awesome stuff.
Up and away, as Superman would say.
That's right. But that brings it to a close, my friend, for this week. So, until next time, we hope you have a wonderful week or weekend, depending on when you're listening to this podcast. So long, everybody.
Later, guys.